Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekday mornings at 9 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, you're listening to NPR News. I'm Tiffany Hansen in for Carrie Miller. Coming up a little later, we'll get some historical context on the government shutdown and see if we can calculate what the whole thing is actually costing us. First, though, it's time for our weekly huddle with the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Tiffany.
How are you?
Well, I'm cold, but I guess I can never say that to somebody in Minnesota.
No, you're not allowed.
But I think the temperature is pretty it's like 18 degrees here, so it's pretty similar, but
well, I don't feel sorry for you. Yeah, that's right.
No. We have I think the growing number of Democrats running for president is keeping everybody warm.
Well, that's exactly what I wanted to get to first. We did have a busy weekend over the holiday weekend. We had the special counsel issuing its BuzzFeed rebuke on Friday, Trump putting forth a budget compromise on Saturday, such as it was. And yesterday, another Democrat climbed aboard the 2020 nomination train. So Kamala Harris. So if I got all of these right, Kamala Harris, Kirsten Gillibrand, Elizabeth Warren, who am I missing?
Julian Castro,
oh, yes.
The former mayor of San Antonio. Mm-hmm. Tulsi Gabbard is the congresswoman from Hawaii. And John Delaney was a congressman from Maryland who gave up his seat to run for president. He's been running since 2017. He lives in Iowa. He hasn't been heard from since, but he's out there visiting all 99 counties in Iowa. And of course, that's who's already announced they're in. There are many more to come, and we'll see what happens with Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders and Beto O'Rourke and Michael Bloomberg.
Right? We're talking policy will not be the big dividing issue between these candidates, of course. So how they're going
Can I just interrupt for a second?
Yeah.
There's truth to that. I think with so many people who have similar voting records, a lot of it has to do with personality and the way they come across. But there are things in their past that have made some progressives, shall we say, in the party a little hesitant. Kirsten Gillibrand, well, what'd she do to Al Franken? Mm-hmm. Kamala Harris, well, what about that early prosecution and those pro-crime bills that locked up an inordinate amount of African-Americans? So there is policy differences, at least in the past, of some of these candidates that could be very consequential.
Well, to that point, I want to play something for you that Kamala Harris said over the weekend on Good Morning America.
We have a system of justice that has included systemic racism. We have a system of justice where a mother and father have to sit their child down, their son down, when he becomes a teenager and tell him that he may be stopped, he may be arrested, and he could be shot based on the color of his skin. There is a lot of work to do, but to suggest it's one or the other, no, I don't buy that.
Well, so she's already starting to address the very issue you brought up.
Yeah, and rightly so, because, I mean, I think what Kamala Harris brings to the table, and of course everybody has positives as well as some negatives, but what she brings is that she has, I mean, she's very popular in California. California, of course, is an early primary state. It comes in right after the first four states, Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Nevada. She's popular in South Carolina, where, of course, we remember that the black vote is instrumental and consequential in South Carolina. And I think she's also very aware that, you know, those tough on crimes proposals she did when she was a prosecutor, she was a district attorney as well as attorney general, those things in other words, she's not one of the real progressives, the Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Tulsi Gabbard kind of progressives that is part of the move to the party way to the left. She is pragmatic in some ways, but she's also very cognizant of the fact that the party has moved considerably to the left. And if she misses that train, she'll miss out, of course.
Is she as centrist as some people think Biden is?
Oh, no, I don't think so at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, Joe, I mean, I think certainly that since she was elected to the Senate in 2016, she has moved somewhat to the left, as has Kirsten Gillibrand when she was appointed to the Senate to fill Hillary Clinton's seat. She was an upstate New York congresswoman who had a rating from the NRA. Mm-hmm. She was tough on immigration. So I guess when you move to the Senate, when you were thinking about running for president, you have to move to the left, whereas Joe Biden, he is trying to make amends. He is also is moving a little bit to the left, and he also backed the 1994 crime bill that in order had a large percentage of African-Americans incarcerated that he has since apologized for. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, he apologized profusely yesterday on Dr. King's birthday.
So I want to talk, move to the special counsel. We had Friday something rather extraordinary in that Mueller issued his rebuke of the BuzzFeed article about President Trump ordering Michael Cohen to lie to Congress. So my question is he, by issuing that statement, confirming all of the other stories that have been printed to this point? Or can we not assume that?
Tiffany, that's a great question, because it's very rare to get any kind of answer out of the Mueller investigation. And when his spokesperson shut down that BuzzFeed, that buzzkill report that said basically that he ordered Michael Cohen to lie to Congress, it made me wonder whether, first of all, he said it was inaccurate. He didn't say it was wrong. Mm-hmm. He said it was inaccurate. So, of course, a lot of anti-Trumpsters around the country saying, well, what part is wrong? I mean, is part of it right? And what about, as you say, what about that other stuff?
Sure.
I get the sense, though, that we are getting close. I mean, look, who knows? But we're getting closer to some kind of a final report. The fact that Rod Rosenstein, the Deputy Attorney General, has announced he's stepping down soon makes me think that it's coming sooner than later, and everything between the filings and the Manafort revelation that he shared, mm-hmm. pulling data with people linked to Russian intelligence, to Rudy Giuliani's crazy flip-flopping answers about Trump properties in Moscow and things like that. I think it's coming sooner than later, and it doesn't sound like there's any shortage of material for Robert Mueller to work with.
Sure. I do want to get to Giuliani in a second, but the BuzzFeed question, the other one that I'm left wondering about is the whole fake news claim and what this does to folks who think that fake news is rampant, and it doesn't seem that we've done ourselves any favors by mainstream media outlets taking the BuzzFeed article on its face value without, corroborating it themselves, we haven't done ourselves any favors.
There were so many lessons of Journalism 101 mm-hmm. that BuzzFeed not only did not follow, but also the commentators on cable news on CNN and MSNBC, and they were going, woohoo, we have grounds for impeachment, and they took it at face value. There is some, look, I think that the media have done a remarkable job in uncovering so much of what's going on that is getting beyond the Trump denials and the Trump misstatements and, dare I say, the Trump lies. But when the media make mistakes like the BuzzFeed story or things that may not be true, it gives Trump and his allies ammunition, saying, well, they're just lying. It's fake news. It's a witch hunt. There's no collusion. And they're all with a mission to stop what the people voted for in 2016. It hurts the cause of journalism, and it certainly emboldens the president, who loves to beat up on the media.
Right. Well, I mean, and to their credit, CNN, I know, did say, we have been unable to independently verify this, but we're going to spend the next half hour on it.
Right. And of course, Don Lemon, went on and said, well, I think he was like saying, oh, my goodness, this is a major stuff without corroborating anything. So
right.
the media does itself a disservice when they jump on the stories that they would probably like to believe.
So back to Cohen a little bit. He is going to go before Congress, right? The House and Senate Intel Committees.
Right, on the House on February 7th. And he's promised to tell, you know, everything he knows. Now, of course,
my question is, how can he? How can he comment on an ongoing investigation?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, I don't think I know the answer to it. But he says he'll tell. You know, they'll say what he knows. Mm-hmm. The House will ask him questions, and he's appearing. I mean, I haven't heard any objections from Mueller to say don't do this.
What do we hope amounts to?
Well, look, just like when the Republicans held the House and then they basically tried to discredit everything the Michael Cohens were saying, and they would say, well, what about Hillary Clinton and Benghazi? Mm-hmm. The Democrats are certainly looking for people who may have something to say about the Trump administration and want to hear from them as well. But look, I think nothing seems to deter Mueller. I think there were, you know, there was still investigations by special prosecutors going on while Sam Ervin and Peter Rodino were doing impeachment hearings or Watergate hearings back in 1973 and 1974. So I think the two, obviously Mueller would not support. Yeah, and not want to see these kind of congressional hearings, mm-hmm. but I don't think they're being deterred or at all. And we'll just see, like, for all we know, I mean, Mueller could come up with something in the next 2 weeks. But either way, it's going to be very fascinating. I think our eyes will be glued to these kind of things. Maybe not the way we were with Sam Ervin in 73 and Rodino in 74, but a lot is expected. And we'll just see where it takes us. I mean, the I word, the impeachment word, that I would come on Kerry's show for weeks and weeks and weeks, if not months and months and months, and say it's premature, nobody's going to say this out loud. People are now saying it out loud. And and I think that's why I kind of think the next couple of weeks, next couple of months are going to be absolutely crucial.
Well, Giuliani still says, I mean, he still maintains that there was no collusion between the president and the Russians. He says now he never said there was any collusion between the campaign and Russia. So he's doing that, to the best of my knowledge, at the time. You know, I only knew that what I was told, basically, which is something that Sarah Huckabee Sanders has used in the past. Right. I'm going on the information I know. Is it just an out, or is it really the case that he's not getting all the info?
If I were Donald Trump's strategist, and of course I'm not looking to do that because that would be insane, but why would you have Rudy Giuliani come on TV so many times saying one thing one day and then offering clarifications the next day? I mean, the fact is that Donald Trump has said for years, not even weeks or months, but for years, that there's been no collusion with the Trump campaign, anybody on the campaign, and Russia. So when Giuliani says, well, I only meant Trump, but maybe people on the campaign may have colluded, that just knocks down everything the president has been saying forever. And just like when Giuliani said basically that, well, Trump was really negotiating the rights for a Moscow skyscraper through the election, when, of course, Trump said, no, that's absolutely not true. And he had to walk it back the next day as well. I don't know why. One, I don't know why people listen to what Giuliani has to say.
Well,
and I don't
know
why Trump allows him on TV.
We had a call from Bob in St. Paul who asked basically the question everyone's thinking, which is, why hasn't Giuliani been fired?
Well, you know, somebody who made his life, made his career on The Apprentice firing people. It is remarkable. I think he likes Rudy Giuliani because he's a scrapper, he's a fighter. Mm-hmm. But I think in the beginning, it seems like his tough bravado on TV was putting some more people to the president's side. But when you have to walk back things, when you say things that basically can hurt your case, or at least disputes what the president's been saying all along. Bob's question is exactly correct. I don't know why this is still going on, but there's a lot of things I don't understand why it's still going on and is still going on.
So before I let you go, I want to talk a little bit about the shutdown. We're going to go into it a little bit more in depth here in a few minutes. But I want your opinion on the 3 years of DACA olive leaf that Trump put out over the weekend, which, you know, according to Nancy Pelosi, was a non-starter. What does this say about which side is getting the upper hand here? Anything?
Well, the polls show, I mean, these polls are before Trump offered this latest proposal, but the polls show that overwhelmingly the public blames Trump and the Republicans. There, of course, is a sizable number who blame the Democrats, and then there's a good number as well that blames both sides. And I was listening to Mara Liasson on the newscast at the top of the hour, and she said, well, it's a possible deal maker. I don't see how. You need 7 Democrats in the Senate to back this. This is basically, I want $5.7 billion for the wall. I will give a temporary 3-year reprieve for the Dreamers. And this is a reprieve. This is rights that the Dreamers had under President Obama that Trump took away. Why would the Democrats back that? I mean, it's not. Look, it's important to end this shutdown. It's 32 days.
Well, they've backed funding for the wall in the past.
So, yes, they have, and every time they were offering more, $1 billion more for border security and law enforcement officials and things like that, but for Trump to say, well, I'll give you a temporary reprieve for the Dreamers. What happens when those 3 years are up? I mean, the wall will be built, and then he removes that as well. So, and plus the fact, Trump has said many, many times that I'm not going to negotiate about the DACA program until the Supreme Court has its say. So the president is giving mixed feelings a lot about how to end this impasse.
Well,
and I think the Democrats saying, go ahead.
I was going to say he is the only one that's come forward with something. He came to the table with something.
Well, you could say that Nancy Pelosi has come thinking of something as well. They want to end the shutdown. They'll give $1 billion more for Wall Street, border security, and then we'll sit down and negotiate. But Trump says, look, Trump, remember that famous sit-down at the Oval Office when he said, I will own this shutdown. This is my decision to shut down the government. And then to blame Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats seems a bit of a stretch, but you know, we'll see what happens. But I don't think it's any more serious of a negotiation than what we've heard before, than we've heard from his national address that lasted 9 minutes and basically told us nothing.
Right. So last question. Do we see any Republicans or Democrats peeling off on this, on either side, to spark some movement?
I think the key, basically, I've said this from the beginning, is though are those Republicans who may be nervous about their reelection chances in 2020, and that's Cory Gardner of Colorado and Susan Collins of Maine, maybe Tom Tillis of North Carolina. They are getting nervous that if the public blames the Republicans for the shutdown, they could feel the brunt of it. But as we learned in 2013, during that shutdown over Obamacare, the Republicans got the blame, but a year later, you know, there was no retribution at all. Republicans did great in the 2014 election. So who knows? I mean, for all we know, by 2020, this will be forgotten and we'll go on to the next crisis.
Well, good news, Ken. I'm here again next week, so we'll get to follow up on all this.
Look forward to it. Thanks, Tiffany.
All right. Thanks, Ken. Bye-bye.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show from NPR News. You can add your voice to the discussion by calling in at 800-242-2828 or tweeting us at Kerri, K-E-R-R-I, NPR. To hear more conversations like this, subscribe to our podcast. And thanks!